Money FM 89.3. Best of the evening runway.
The Washington Report.
Money FM 89.3. My name is Elliot Danker. It's time now to turn our attention to headlines from the United States. We'll talk about Donald Trump's looming $454 million fraud judgment deadline, as well as the country's aviation scene, whether or not that's in trouble. Helping me out on the line is Dr. John Donaldson, Associate Professor of Political Science, School of Social Sciences, Singapore Management University. Dr. Donaldson, how are you?
Great. How are you this afternoon?
Very good, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time. Quite a few interesting topics. Let's start off with the $454 million one, Donald Trump's fraud judgment. So the 25th of March deadline, he's expected to spend in the courtroom of a New York judge. I guess the question is, will he or will he not be able to come up with the funds?
It sure doesn't look like it. Actually, he'll have a busy Monday, you know, Monday coming up in New York City, because he'll also be in a different New York courtroom where they're expected to announce his criminal trial date. So he really will have split attention. But the idea of him coming up with, you know, $400 million plus as a bond while he appeals this decision, it looks like it's not going to happen. So that will be now in the court of New York Attorney General Letitia James. For her next move, whether she'll move to seize property, it's unlikely she'll give him another extension because she already gave him one. But seizing property, seizing his bank assets, all of those are on the table. But it's also a lot easier to say than to do. So we'll see what James will do when, as expected, Donald Trump will not be able to put up the bond he needs to while he appeals that decision.
Is the Mar-a-Lago estate the Trump card here? Could that be perhaps a way of raising the funds if he were to, say, fast-track a property sale there?
Nice pun there, by the way. And but Mar-a-Lago, there's two issues there. First is New York, actually, it is hard. It takes almost 2 months to seize any kind of assets and put it up for sale. Mm. And so Florida's law is a little bit more liberal. That makes Mar-a-Lago a little bit more, what do you call it, appealing. But remember, this is a state action. So for a New York attorney general to go down to Florida, where they don't have any presence, no office, to try to seize that asset is going to be a lot harder than it would be in New York, where she will have command over the entire, you know, judicial infrastructure that can help her move on Trump's assets there. So we'll see whether she does that. That certainly would raise it. But also the optics of seizing Donald Trump's effectively is also going to be quite tricky, which is in already what is a politicized, highly political kind of a case, with Trump trying to argue that James just has it out for him. And for her to try to seize his home, effectively his home, you know, that would just heighten that kind of narrative.
Doctor, I'm not going to lie. Because there's so many interwoven issues, I do get a little confused. And I'm wondering, based on the rule of law, if, let's say, this money, he can't come up with this money, the odds of him being declared a bankrupt, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's also possible he could declare bankruptcy. The optics of that, when he's trying to, of course, he has declared bankruptcy in the past, but the optics of him declaring bankruptcy when he's trying to run for president on credentials of being a successful businessman, and he's trying to argue that he's a billionaire, is, you know, is a little bit awkward. So many people argue that he's unlikely to do that, whether he'll have a choice or not in that matter. But if I what I expect, I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's what, 4:15 a.m. in New York, so we'll find out soon. But I expect that he'll show up without a bond in hand, and the next move will be up to Attorney General James, and we'll see what she does in response.
Interesting, if you don't mind me expanding a little bit on that. Donald Trump filing for bankruptcy, A, will that prevent him from running for president other than the optics of it? B, does it really matter considering the kind of support he gets from the red states?
Yeah, actually, those are two very good points. First of all, it would not at all preclude him from running for the United States. There's three and really only three qualifications for president of the United States, and that's not one of them. There's even a question of whether he could run for president in jail if he were imprisoned in one of his four criminal trials. And there is a precedent where a third party candidate ran for president from jail. So that indeed, you can be an indicted and, what do you call it, imprisoned criminal and still run for president. So none of that would disqualify him. And you're right, among his, you know, diehard supporters, there's almost nothing that could happen to Donald Trump, or that, you know, declaring bankruptcy would just be nothing to them. But the question really is the swing voters, such as they are, whether Republicans who are not firmly within the Donald Trump camp, as well as independents, whether that would be a major turnoff for them in terms of the narrative that, that Trump is trying to say. And that is in the swing states that Biden and Trump will be competing with each other in, I think may prove decisive. And so for him to declare a bankruptcy, bad optics, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Does
anything
jail
is out for right? Anything could happen, really.
Does jail come into the picture? Is it a factor at all?
Not with this case. This is a civil case,
right.
And so the worst that Letitia James could do is to seize his assets. He is, of course, up for criminal trials, including one trial date, as I said earlier, that will be set also today, or is expected to be set in this morning, New York City time, for his. You know, that's that complicated case where he paid off a porn star actress.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about a manic Monday. Okay, Doctor, let's move on to talk about the U.S. aviation scene. First, we have Boeing. It's become so bad that travelers are changing flights to avoid Boeing airplanes. I remember a time you wouldn't care, but ever since there were a few incidents, people started to check what kind of plane they were flying on. Will Boeing, the woes that they're going through, prove yet another black swan event for airlines?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem. It used to be that the Boeing label was a sign of, you know, quality, and now it's more or less a warning label. And, you know, it's really quite scary. And the major problem is that the world, the entire world, really only has two aircraft, major, huge aircraft manufacturing companies. And so Airbus and Boeing has been the major competitors. If Boeing, you know, if it runs out of steam, if it it's already having these major problems, it's going to be difficult, because really the aircraft industry needs competition. You have much smaller players, but whether one of them would be able to rise or whether Boeing would be able to get back on its feet. But it really is just like another, what do you call it, a stone thrown against Boeing. And it really is an own goal. These are problems that Boeing should have corrected, should never have happened in the first place.
Yeah.
And yet it seems like bad news just keeps coming.
Yeah, the optics at the end of the day play such a huge part. I mean, you still have that whistleblower, John Barnett's death, and that's got Netflix documentary written all over it.
Right. I mean, it is a very distressing kind of a thing. There is no sort of, you know, hint of conspiracy or anything like that. But even still, though, he must have been under such major stress, and who knows? It's hard to speculate. But anyway, it really is a black mark. And when people really should be protecting whistleblowers to make sure that they have the coverage that they need to blow the whistle on major problems.
Yeah. Then there's United Airlines facing scrutiny after 9 safety incidents in the past 2 weeks. There was an engine fire, emergency landings, a wheel that came detached from a plane. Okay, what's happening here? I mean, the Federal Aviation Administration is keeping a close eye. Is that enough, though?
Yeah, I mean, so you owe me a half-year conversation. We're just going from Trump to Boeing to United Airlines. And, of course, that the United Airlines is related to Boeing. But really, the airlines have their brand on the airplanes. They're responsible also for safety. And to have 9 safety incidents in 2 weeks is really a major black mark. And, again, it's an industry where there's less competition than there was before. Only 4 major U.S. airlines, you know, exist. And for one of them to go down. But really, what's unique about United Airlines? All this is a major problem within the American airline industry. I'm not sure if you, as a Singaporean, have, you know, traveled in America recently, but it's no fun. I would much rather go out to, Changi, because, you know, the airlines just treat their customers terribly.
Yes.
And then to add safety on top of it. And stock prices in their case are actually going up. Boeing going down, but in every case, in terms of these major airlines, their stock prices are going up, so they're being rewarded by their stockholders, you know, for trying to create these kinds of efficiencies at consumer expense. But safety is the red line. As soon as safety becomes questioned, then it's a major problem for the U.S. airlines.
Yeah. In-flight service, that's the culture shock you'll go through.
Horrible.
Doctor, I do want to get your personal opinion, though. What are your thoughts on how their CEO, Scott Kirby, is handling the situation right now?
So it's a major problem. It's a little bit like, you know, how many trust me's can one CEO do? He's been around for a few years, right? He's been 3-4 years he's been CEO. And so all of this stuff, much of the stuff is on his watch. If he was coming in and saying, we are going to make safety number one, well, you know, that was a few years ago. What can you have to show for it? To have, you know, 9 safety incidents after that, it's really hard for him to make an excuse that, trust me, we'll change things.
Mm. Doctor, I'm afraid I don't have a happy conversation, so I'm going to have to owe you lunch, because we move from all of this to the UN Security Council not passing that draft US resolution on the Gaza ceasefire. What is missing here for this to go through?
Well, I mean, I think the whole thing, to be honest with you, is kind of a distraction. Let's say that there is a UN resolution. What is it going to mean on the ground? This is all very symbolic. The U.S. has already vetoed 3 calls for ceasefire. A lot of this is U.S. domestic politics that's playing out in our eyes, where Biden is under pressure to toe a harder line on Netanyahu. But then China and Russia swoop in and say this isn't hard enough. Now there's an alternative resolution. But even if any of these get passed on the ground, it's not going to make that much of a difference. And so, you know, again, going from depressing topic to depressing topic, this is the most depressing one, because I just don't see a good resolution. And there's very little that the UN can do, very little that the US can do.
So I'm going to thread carefully with this question. Yes, you're right. I agree with you. There's very little that can be done, being done even. Now, the U.S. and China exercising their veto, you mentioned earlier on, it's not hard enough a line. The odds that this is also being used as a bit of a political maneuver. Any thoughts on that?
On whose part?
On Russia and China.
On Russia and China, yeah. I mean, of course, the rivalry between sort of the Western bloc and versus Russia and China, and this could be playing a part. But I think in terms of the regional conflict that we're looking at, the main issue is that the support for Israel is just diminishing. And, you know, Israel correctly argues it was us that got attacked October 7th. Yeah. You know, Hamas are no angels. They're holding hostages and, you know, all of those kinds of things. But if you look at the broader, lens of history, it's hard to point fingers at really who is who. And Israel is doing it, or Netanyahu is really doing himself no favors in terms of this brutal, you know, action that is happening in Gaza.
All right. I've been speaking with Dr. John Donaldson, Associate Professor of Political Science, School of Social Sciences at the Singapore Management University. Dr. John Donaldson, thank you so much for your time today.
Happier days ahead, I hope. Take care now.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.